Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Well, across the country, there are growing numbers of people who are trying to be conscious of the environmental impact of the way that they live. On college campuses, this issue, sustainability, has been important for a long time, for decades, really. All across the country, students, administrators are looking at the carbon footprints of their institutions, and they're making commitments on everything from campus gardens to green buildings. In this hour of the show, we'll be talking about some of the sustainability efforts at two schools that are very close to us, the University of Illinois and Parkland College. And we have two guests in the studio here with me. Pradeep Khanna is Associate Chancellor at U of I here in Urbana-Champaign, and sustainability is one of the things that falls within his area of responsibility. Also here, Seamus Riley. He's Vice President for Institutional Advancement at Parkland College. And as we talk, questions and comments are welcome from people who are listening. The numbers here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. So that's for local folks. We have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. And we also have email. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point, people are welcome to join the conversation. We just ask folks to try to be brief so we can keep people, getting as many people as possible and keep the program moving along. But, of course, anybody who is interested in joining in should feel welcome. And thanks to you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
As I said, I think that on campuses like yours, that administrators have been thinking about these issues for a long time. You think about your energy consumption. You think about the kind of outreach that you do. You think about how you incorporate these themes into instruction. So that's not really new. What seems to strike me, though, as being new is the kind of formal commitment that colleges are making and setting goals and making that part of their institutional personality, and you know, being right up front and saying these things are really important and they're embedded in what we do. And maybe we can start talking a little bit about that. And let's start with the University of Illinois. How are these kind of goals becoming incorporated in what the university, how the university thinks about itself?
Yeah, David, I'm delighted to be here talking about an issue which is extremely important for our campus. Sustainability and environment has been an integral part of our research and teaching programs forever. But it was in 2008 when our chancellor signed American University College and University President's Climate Commitment that we had a very sharp focus on sustainability. Mm-hmm. And one of the key commitments under that was to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050. And as a part of, by signing that commitment, we agreed to undertake a series of steps to work towards carbon neutrality. And the first thing was to develop a comprehensive climate action plan, which we'll call ICAP, or Illinois Climate Action Plan, which was completed by 2010 and submitted to this group that holds us accountable for the commitments that we make. And as a part of that commitment, as a part of that agreement that we made almost with ourselves, was to reduce our use of natural resources significantly, to transform our campus into a living learning community for sustainability, and to make sustainability a priority in our research programs and our teaching programs. Mm-hmm. So just to talk very quickly about some of the key commitments that we made was to reduce our energy consumption by 20% by 2015. Now, all this was over the baseline of fiscal year 2008 as the starting point. To reduce our carbon emissions by 15% by 2015, to reduce our water reduction by 20%. So these are kind of very, very clear, measurable, tangible goals. But in addition to that, we also made a commitment to build better buildings. So to have all our buildings that are built after 2010 to have at least LEED Gold certification. And buildings built after 2015 should be at the LEED Platinum level. We decided to infuse our teaching curriculum with sustainability. we decided to proactively support programs related to sustainability on our campus. So I can go on and on, but I think I'll take a stop.
Sure. Well, let me then move over to Seamus Riley and have you talk about the kind of things that are happening at Parkland. I'm expecting that you're thinking about the very sorts of things that the administrators here at the University of Illinois are thinking about.
Right, exactly. You know, what you mentioned about the formalization of attitude to sustainability, I think for many people, especially in the Midwest, who have been conscious of the environment, the importance of our natural environment. Similarly to the University of Illinois, Parkland College also participates in the same university structure, President's Climate Commitment Agreement, and we signed that in 2009. Additionally, we're also part of the Illinois Sustainability Compact, which we formed in 2010 under Governor Quinn. Similar to the University of Illinois, we also identified a climate action plan, Parkland's climate action plan. I guess we can call that PCAP if you guys call it ICAP, right? And similarly, to try to begin to develop some sort of criteria for getting to a carbon neutrality. In our case, by 2060, because we've undertaken some major construction pieces on campus, so it's going to take some time. You know, we've been working on this for economic reasons, like many universities, because the key to the sustainability piece, in addition to the greater general definition of sustainability in a community, is to make us more efficient. One of the things that Parkland has done is closed on Fridays for the past two summers, which has made a significant change to the overall energy costs. We've adjusted the thermometer, so we're a little bit cooler in the winter and warmer in the summer. And those sort of smaller changes have significant impact in terms of our utility costs. And as one of the things that we don't have much control over and we're trying to get a handle on in terms of the cost of running an institution, these sort of significant small steps have made a significant impact.
Yeah. So how, if you balance these two things, if you obviously have to be concerned about the cost of operations,
mm-hmm.
and for that reason you want to be as efficient as possible because you want to hold down your costs. There also is this commitment to a sort of a principle that goes beyond just what your bottom line is. How do you balance those, the relative importance of those two things?
Well, I think it's a challenge because obviously the commitment to something like a zero sort of emission process is an extremely difficult thing to reach. It takes a tremendous effort. Implementing sustainability changes, while there are obviously economic reasons to do it, there are also economic costs associated with it. It tends to be quite expensive to implement some of these changes that we want to make. So it is a challenge, and people have to readjust to sort of get to it.
I think if you make sustainability a part of your mission and a part of your planning process, when you're planning a building, when you're planning any activity, you say sustainability will be an important consideration. Then you're able to build it into the entire planning process and are able to make significant savings without substantial costs in many cases. So I was looking at the numbers. During the last 4 years, our campus has invested about $25.5 million. That was at the end of fiscal year 11. And we had, in those years, accomplished savings of $12 million. So almost half of the cost was recovered. And those improvements are in place over the period of time, they will completely recover the cost. Now, not every activity will be totally able to recover the cost or maybe able to pay a higher dividend than the investment made. But then we have to make a commitment as an institution and I presume as human beings also to live responsibly and to use natural resources effectively and responsibly and efficiently so that we take the least amount possible and are still able to meet all our goals.
Yeah. Do you find that students or people who are considering becoming students at the University of Illinois are expecting that this kind of commitment will be something that the institution has made and that, in fact, may influence their decision about whether or not they want to come here?
Oh, definitely. I think we are number one in the country in terms of student commitment to sustainability. So our students a few years back decided to tax themselves, voted to impose a fee upon themselves that generates over $1 million a year that they invest in sustainability projects. I think the two fees that generate about $16 a semester per student. So as a result of that, they not only have a stake in this campus where they are the big part of our campus and the sole reason we exist, but they're partners with administration, with the leadership on the campus, on working proactively to transform our institution into a more sustainable, more environment-friendly campus.
I think in the curriculum especially, I think the students drive a lot of what it is that we do in terms of whether it be in the construction field or in the biological sciences field. Our natural sciences department has been a leader in sort of some of the sustainable practices. Students, I think, come to Parkland expecting a certain level of institutional commitment to sustainability. They expect a recycling program. And they also want to be involved in prairie restoration, in cleanup, in sustainability projects on campus that they can volunteer for. And I think that has helped as our faculty begin to try to shape the curriculum in line with the changing sort of view regarding sustainability. But certainly the students come with a higher sense of expectation because it has been ingrained from a much younger age for them, yeah. I think.
Do you have people, do you think more people who are coming there thinking about training for things that we might call green careers, I guess, things that addressing things that by their very nature address sustainability issues?
I think, you know, maybe less specifically sort of sustainability and green as an individual career, but certainly as part of every career. And I think, you know, one of the great strengths of the sustainability movement is going to be the fact that people don't see it as an exclusive curriculum, but as something that is part of every curriculum that we have on the campus. And that's sort of what's interesting as we see our students engage across the campus and not just natural sciences or not just engineering. And I think that's one of the more interesting things. In every single curriculum, every single department we have, we're talking about sustainability issues.
That's something that I was interested in. Maybe, Dr. Connie, you can talk about that a little bit, about ways in which are there deliberate sort of ways in which these things do enter into teaching, and particularly I'm thinking of those subjects that don't directly address them. So not people who are studying environmental sciences, not people who are engineers, not people that look at this in a very direct way, but in other fields as well.
Yes, I think there's a massive effort going on at the Urbana campus to infuse sustainability into all types of courses. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you have a writing course. There could be a component, a small module on sustainability, writing about sustainability. So, in the last 4 years, our faculty have modified about 250 courses across 43 departments to have a module on sustainability as a part of the regular subject matter of that course. We also run this sustainability education workshop series where faculty from different departments participate. It's a two-day workshop followed by some activities throughout the year where they learn how to add sustainability into their curriculum. And so far, over 60 faculty have participated in those programs, and more than 6,500 students have benefited just from the changes introduced by faculty to their courses after attending these workshops. So I think, as Seamus was saying, it's not important to really create courses about sustainability, but to have a part of the entire learning experience and educational experience of students so that when they leave and work for industry, work for government, and assume positions of leadership, they understand the importance of sustainability and try to be a part of the culture of their new institution.
The faculty at Parkland have a sustainable campus committee, faculty and staff, and that is part of our regular Parkland College Association, so it's a regular Senate group. One of the great advantages of that being a formal piece of the governance structure is that it allows them access to different funds from an innovation fund we have. And this innovation fund has allowed individual faculty and staff to develop smaller sort of sustainability projects like an occupancy sensor piece or water bottle refill stations, and that's also engaged the faculty as an element of the governance of the college, again, which is a way to sort of involve more people throughout the campus and to get them thinking about it.
I've got a caller here I want to bring into the conversation, and for anyone who's just tuned in, I should also introduce again the guests. Last fellow you heard is Seamus Riley. He's Vice President for Institutional Advancement at Parkland College. Also here in studio with me is Pradeep Khanna. He's Associate Chancellor at University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. We're talking about sustainability on colleges. And if you have questions, comments, you can certainly give us a call. We have somebody here ready to go, and we will talk with them in Champaign County. Line number one. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I think I saw that U of I has gone off coal and it's on natural gas. Now, I guess I would applaud that since nominally that's a move to lower the carbon footprint. But given the unknowns in the fracking process, and it started in southern Illinois, by the way, earthquakes, but the idea that we don't really know if there's enough methane released in the fracking process and how containable it is. Obviously, they want to sell it, but and that's much more of a carbon, heat sink kind of phenomenon than carbon dioxide even is. So in broad strokes, what can you say about that? I was maybe hoping that maybe Eastern would be involved because I know that they've started a wood chip electrical cogeneration plant down there, I think. That is a renewable resource. It's subject to some problems, but nominally it is renewable. And I'm just wondering about the broad strokes. Coal has been researched here a lot, and mainly as a product. I'm wondering if, and this is probably just out to the air ether, because I don't know whether people know about the specifics. Maybe someone in the audience does, but coal is sort of the veins of the water in the aquifers in some areas, so both mining it and fracking areas where those kinds of things are going on are subject to some unknowns as well. So could you react to some of that?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Sure, absolutely. I think you have raised a very important point here. And the University of Illinois is not using coal this year, and I think we did not use it last year also. But we have a campus committee looking at what is the best way to fuel our power plant. It's a very important thing to see the total life cycle impact of a source of fuel, the environmental impact and different types of environmental impact, as well as the cost of each source of energy available to us. So I think our campus is looking comprehensively at various sources for energy generation. There have been remarkable improvements in using coal for energy generation. More cleaner technologies have become available. So the campus commitment was under the climate action plan to stop using coal by 2017. But we have a task force looking at those issues very carefully and to see which is the best fuel for powering our energy generation. And there are two factors here, the total life cycle environmental impact of a fuel and the cost associated with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's my understanding that there is some research or will be some research going on looking at potential for using biomass in the power plant. And also there is this plan to build a rather large solar farm on the, appropriately enough, on the South Farms, a large solar array to generate some power that way.
That's right. We had made a commitment to get 5% of our energy from renewable sources by 2015. We have solar arrays on many buildings across campus. We are looking at a biomass-burned, a fueled burner to generate electricity. We are looking at a solar farm. And I think in each case, we are trying to minimize environmental impact while being sensitive to the impact of our actions on the economy of the state. So I think it'll be a mix of sources or inputs that will be used for energy generation.
All right. If the caller's still there, did you want to follow up on that at all?
Well, I didn't expect it, but thanks. The mix of resources is a good thing. What about this whole idea of the threat of coal? And I gather you've covered most of that. I just wanted to sort of bring that up. I guess the student fund and the wind farm debacle could stand some airing out as well. But I'll hang up and listen. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
So the question about the wind farm or the setting up the windmills, the campus had looked at it very seriously, and there were some issues. As I said earlier, that we have to look at the total societal and a life cycle impact of a source of energy. And there were some concerns in the neighborhood. There were some other concerns. So the campus decided not to pursue the windmills. But the campus made significant investments to set up a revolving loan fund. The students provided $500,000 funding to that, to start that fund, and between the campus and the president's office, we received $1.25 million extra. So if we have a $1.75 million fund available now, most of which is being used for changing light bulbs to have more efficient light bulbs. So we are trying to achieve the same level of energy generation or save the same amount of energy that would have been generated through the wind turbines. But we just had to abandon that project, and I thought that was a good decision.
Yeah. Oh, over at Parkland, are you looking at the possibility of generating some of your own energy?
Yeah, excuse me. Actually, it's interesting. We don't have the same sort of scale, and so coal is not something we use, but we have a chilled water plant and then natural gas. You know, as Pradeep mentioned, one of the advantages of new construction is that it allows you to sort of do some things. So we've got geothermal wells, for example, which will be part of the Applied Technology Center. And also using natural light. I mean, one of the things when we begin to design buildings now, how much natural light can we use? What type of glass can we use, which will both, you know, retain heat inside the building as well as generate sort of heat in the winter? We have been working for a long time on miscanthus, actually. We have been growing rhizomes over there. We're looking at a demonstration model. Part of the difficulty with getting support or funding for biomass generators for electricity is that they want us to generate electricity. Once you get up to the generating electricity cost, you're about $250,000. And that's a significant impact financially on the college to try to do it. So we've been looking at trying to develop a smaller boiler, which would be used as a demonstration model to do it. We've also looked seriously at the potential of solar in the future because of the unique angularity of the roofs at Parkland College and the significant roof space that is available, as well as the fact that many of the roofs are on the southern aspect. So there's certainly some things. As we have come online, though, we've been able to have some efficiencies in terms of extending the chilled water plant loop, making some additional geothermal pieces, and then as new buildings come online, looking at different ways of energy savings within, as well as the different types of energy that we can use. Mm.
Well, other calls are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We're also happy to take email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's something that's come in as an email question. Someone's interested in what you think about the move of many institutions and food service vendors toward local sourcing of food. The person writes, I think the University of Illinois Sustainable Student Farm supplies campus dining halls to some small extent. Is there a longer-term objective for the percentage of locally sourced food?
Right, yes. We have a goal of 30% local food consumption on the campus. So sourcing of all the food that we consume on the campus, 30% should be sourced locally. Now, the definition of local is within 100 miles of the campus. And it is partially because it takes time to build a supply chain of local foods. But I think the Student Sustainability Farm is a wonderful partnership between dining halls and a student-run project to include local foods in the food that's served on the campus.
Mm. Parkland also has just initiated a sustainable farm with the hope that this will become an actual organic farm. It takes a number of years before you can claim to be organic. You've got to go through the process of making sure the earth is perfect. Not so sure right now that we would be supplying our sort of vendors on campus or food for thought, but there is some idea that perhaps the students might have some sort of an entrepreneurial opportunity to either market the foods or maybe even work with the food supplier on campus. So it's an exciting opportunity. It's another example of the way in which sometimes our students are our best teachers there.
Yeah. Okay. To another caller here. This is Belgium, line number 4. Hello.
Hello and good morning to you all. Mm-hmm. In earlier programs in the past, I've spoken with Minister Inge about the Bloom Box, which uses carbon-based compounds to reduce it, to produce hydrogen, to produce electricity in a much more ecologically friendly method, especially since here in the Midwest we do have access to a great deal of natural gas, which would be a very good feedstock for it. We also have access to coal that could be used in ways to produce the hydrogen to run this new technology. It's also a new technology that would be nice to generate into possibly a source of profit for America if we can make it do a better job of what it's doing. I realize now it's still kind of expensive, but this would tie in a lot of university-type things for research and all sorts of things. Have you guys given that any thought?
Well, the University of Illinois has been looking at several technologies, many of them at experimental stage, many of them a little at different stages of development. I cannot respond specifically to the technology that you mentioned. I can look into that and see whether that has been evaluated. But I know we are meeting with another group later this week to look at another technology. I think there are three considerations that are really important. One, is it permissible to have the technology in Illinois and the total environmental impact of the technology is fully understood? The second is the cost of energy generation, and the third is the availability of feedstock for that. And you have mentioned that the feedstock is easily available in Illinois. But I think we keep on looking at these technologies, and I'll go and talk to my colleagues and see if they've looked at the technology.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're talking this morning in this part of Focus about sustainability on college campuses, and we have two guests with us, Pradeep Khanna from the U of I and Seamus Riley from Parkland. We will talk more after a very short break. This is Focus.
Support comes from The Music Shop, celebrating 51 years of service to music education. The Music Shop serves over 200 school music programs with band and orchestra instruments, a large sheet music department, thousands of accessories, and private lessons at 27 East Marketview Drive in Marketview Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and we have two different topics for you each morning. In the second hour today, the guest is historian Edward Berenson. We'll be talking about the Statue of Liberty and how it came to be, who were the people that were responsible for building it, and what was some of the, at least the early reaction in the United States to the project. That's in the next hour of our show today. Tomorrow morning, we'll talk about Egypt and the politics of that country. They have had their first round of elections. There will be a runoff in June to select a new president, and it looks like the two top candidates will be one from the Muslim Brotherhood and the other who was a former prime minister of the country, and much of the opposition in Egypt is not very happy about the choice. Then in the second hour, tomorrow, Roger Thoreau is our guest. He's a longtime reporter for the Wall Street Journal, has written a lot about the issue of hunger around the world, and we'll talk about his book, The Last Hunger Season, A Year in an African Farm Community on the Brink of Change. And he makes the observation that, ironically enough, many of the world's chronic hungry are farmers, particularly farmers in Africa. We'll try to talk a little bit about why that is and how it might be addressed. That's tomorrow in the second hour. You can check the schedule by going to the website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media. In this hour focus, we have two guests. Pradeep Khanna is Associate Chancellor at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Seamus Riley is Vice President for Institutional Advancement at Parkland College. We're talking about sustainability and how college campuses are looking at that both in terms of their operations and also in terms of what it is they teach. And questions and comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Seamus, you said something about how the students are teaching you. I'm really interested in this idea about how the kinds of expectations that students have and what they think is important ends up maybe moving the institution on these kinds of issues. And maybe that's something you could talk some more about.
Well, I think, you know, one example would be technology. Students come with a different expectation of how learning takes place or how they garner information. The influx of all kinds of new sort of media, like, for example, tablets, for example, led some faculty to develop a paperless classroom using tablets instead of the sort of a typical computer room with paper and all the rest. That was something I think that faculty sort of saw as an opportunity to sort of, you know, think a little bit about how students are comfortable interacting with one another and learning in a different environment. You know, that's something that I don't think we would necessarily have come up with on our own. I think it was sort of driven. One other thing, you know, we tend to sort of do things in a sort of a slightly smaller scale. You know, a lot of our students are passionate about recycling and recycling efforts. One of our students from Parkland went on to set up his own company, which was just using recycled products. That sort of generated a lot of conversation on campus about the idea of a green space, a green roof. And we have balconies around the college, and one of them in the library got turned into an actual green roof. And that was something that our students in the landscape horticulture program were, you know, involved in. But it, as well as sort of doing something like a green roof, which is obvious and visual, it really is learning about the types of plants that we are planting and the native species versus imported species into the college. These are things I think that students are beginning to want to have conversations about it, and something they bring to us. And I think it's sort of an exciting sort of movement.
Yeah, I think same at the University of Illinois. Our climate action plan that I talked about several times today, it's a thick 60-page document. And our students were a part of the planning process and very heavily involved. And they did kind of put pressure on us and pushed us to have very aggressive targets and to look at every aspect of campus operations, every space on this campus, and to see how to make it more sustainable. Mm-hmm. And we had just concluded a study on the campus. We have an open space in the center of the campus called the Military Access, which is south of the College of Business and in that area and north of the Krennert Museum. And they're working with us to restore natural landscape in that area. So I think it has been extremely helpful, because I always feel students are much more enthusiastic, and they should be. They want to transform the world. And they kind of motivate us to look at our own operations, at our own way of thinking, with a very open mind, a strange way of saying that. But they have been a big, big influence in helping us to make the campus more sustainable. Mm.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about the issue of solid waste, because I'm sure that for a campus as big as this, I'm sorry, it's an issue on mm-hmm, Parkland sure. campus as well, but that you have obviously an enormous expense in meeting the college's energy needs.
Right.
Then there's also another, I'm sure, an enormous expense in just dealing with the amount of waste that gets produced. Mm-hmm. Food waste, which I'm sure could be composted, paper waste, which could be recycled, plastic waste, which could be recycled, but it must be just an enormous challenge.
It is, actually, yeah. We received a grant from the state to set up the first composting grant, and the state is paying half of the money. The students, through their self-assessed tax or fee that I talked about earlier, are contributing the other half. Hmm. So we'll be starting composting all the food that is not consumed on the campus. We have a goal of 75% recycling by 2020. I think that's a big issue. And we looked at an exercise in the last couple of years and how all that could be converted for electricity generation. And one of the challenge always is the cost, the huge investment in creating, putting in place the machinery or the plant to do it, and then operating it. But I think we have very, very aggressive goal of reusing and recycling everything that we can.
One of the things that, you know, we use a corporation in town to take all of our recycling. So we have sort of streamlined the recycling, which is, you know, benefit of the college in terms of the actual cost. Again, this is one of the things that's sort of been driven by faculty, staff, and students in terms of like really asking for more specific recycling stations to be available. We do a lot of paper recycling, a lot of plastic recycling. Our waste is food waste is sort of taken care of by our sort of food vendor on campus. I am personally interested in that notion of composting. I know that Harvard University has a really intricate scheme where they process it into a liquid and then spray it on the grounds to keep the grass green. So those are kinds of things that we can begin to do, I think, in student groups and student classes, individual classes, to begin to develop some of these ideas. Mm-hmm. We have a less, obviously, in terms of scale, we obviously have a different level of responsibility in terms of solid waste. One of the things we've done at our campus, which is a very large campus, is really sort of changed how we've looked at maintaining the landscape, including expansion of no-mow zones, sort of a change in the philosophy of how we cut the grass. That has made a huge change to the energy cost, because when you think about how much less you have to mow, the costs associated with that. So sort of subtle changes that we have made. But again, this is part of a rethinking from the get-go of how we want to go about running our campuses. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the smaller changes that we make have really significant impacts, and that's what we're sort of aiming for.
Well, I'm sure there are some things that are big and dramatic that you can do. And if you, I think, for example, I read about the iHotel. They're talking about putting a green roof on the iHotel. So that's the kind of thing that's showy. But I imagine that probably a lot of the things that can really add up are really small things. Like the university has a crew of engineers that they send all around the university, uh-huh. and they set up and went in some building somewhere. We had these guys here in our building, and they just went over the place with the proverbial fine-tooth comb, looking at tiny little tweaks, things that they could to improve the energy efficiency of the building. When you add all those little things together, that can add up to a very big savings. But any of them as an individual item is not going to be real dramatic.
Yes, I think that's very, very important. And I'm glad you mentioned that our retro commissioning teams have been extremely successful, and they received Governor's Sustainability Award last year. As a result of those efforts, I said earlier that we had a commitment to reduce our energy consumption by 20% by 2015. But we have already achieved 19% of those savings. The goal for reducing our carbon emissions was 15% by 2014. We are at 14%. Water consumption, 20% goal, 16% 4 years before that. I think this is that going over everything with a tooth comb, looking at all your consumption and trying to see where you can make savings. And many of these things don't cost a lot. Some of them are behavior changes. Some of them are minor fixes. Upgrading the technology in many cases, that can lead to very significant savings.
Mm-hmm. Again, simple things like occupancy sensors in bathrooms. You don't realize how much lights are on until you start going in sort of summertime and realize that all the bathrooms are dark because, in fact, there's no need for light on there. A sort of a centralization of shutting down computer stations over the course of the weekend, so that individual computer stations are not left on all weekend. These are small habits that people need to develop. You know, part of the difficulty is with sustainability issues is that people want to see something dramatic because they see that will, you know, it's a visual, sort of a visible sort of testament to what you're doing in sustainability. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that it's the small little things that really have the most benefit, because it impacts the most people. And changing those sort of practices across campus, again, part of the education piece we talk about in sustainability. You know, are you buying a plastic bottle of water, or are you bringing a regular reusable container, and are you using the bottle refill stations that are at, you know, Parkland and at the University of Illinois? Are you turning the light off on your campus? Are you choosing to bike one day a week to work, or walk instead of driving your car? So those are kind of personal changes people can make. Mm-hmm.
And that's, though, there again, you, unless people are really primed to do that, unless they themselves think that that's important, then there's a little sales job that you have to do, or an educational job that you have to do to that person who says, you know, if you say to them, well, when at the end of the day, when you go, turn out the light. And they might say, well, really? I mean, really? How much difference does it make if I turn out the light? Well, if we get everybody in the entire campus to do it, now that's something. But I think you have to persuade the person that, in fact, it, whatever they do one way or another is actually going to make a difference.
Right. I think my favorite example is using bottled water. I mean, even recycled or using reusable coffee containers, you know, which are now mm-hmm. everywhere. I mean, that's such a simple concept. And it took a long time for people to just stop just getting a reusable or a plastic or a paper cup. But people are actually starting to do that. And I think it does take some time.
I think the two things that can help with that, one is communicating to people, to the stakeholders, why it is important and what is being done in that area. And the second is telling the story of your success. What have we done as campuses to go towards that? So like Seamus mentioned earlier, they have joined this Campus Sustainability Compact of the state. We did the same thing in 2010. We decided to go up to the gold level, and we have done it for 2 years, and we force ourselves. Similarly, with this, the president's climate commitment, they run this annual contest, and we participated in this contest. We were a finalist. The process for generating the materials for the contest, which included a video, they forced us to think about sustainability on the campus. They generated materials that many people looked at and made them think about how they could be more responsible in using resources in their office or at their home.
I think the new construction at Parkland, you know, the fact that both buildings are, certainly the new student services building is hoping to be LEED Gold. I think those sort of larger projects sort of bring home to people the importance of sustainability. Certainly closing the campus on Fridays had a significant impact on the energy costs for the college. And that sort of got people's attention as we look at sort of tightening budgets from the state level. And I do think that it is an education piece. I mean, one of the projects the Sustainability Campus Committee had was a film festival, basically sort of to get the word out to make people more aware of it. I do think it is something that people are more conscious of, though, yeah. as we go through.
You know, I'm just curious, and I promise I have a caller here we'll get it right too, but if you have a building that is built to the highest environmental standard, I'm sure that over time that it pays for itself. You recover whatever costs are involved in building that building. But is there a big difference if you're building, say, like a student services building, or building a classroom building or a laboratory or something? Is there a big difference in the upfront cost if you say at the beginning, I want this to be a LEED Gold building, or I want this to be a LEED Platinum building?
I do not know how much more it costs, but it costs more. And you have to do the entire design, entire planning a little differently. Mm-hmm. And the savings are substantial. Our business instructional facility is LEED Platinum. And the new building for the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering will also be LEED Platinum. There are substantial savings. I do not know over what time horizon are all those costs recovered.
And most of them are over the long term. And a lot of the requirements for the different categories really require significant change in behavior, and not just that you're using different building materials, which of course, you know, you can sort of recover those costs, but, you know, reducing cars completely, for example, which would be a significant change, or making huge changes in the overall energy, like all solar or all renewable energy, which are very, very difficult and challenging upfront costs, but also cultural changes, for example. And when you try to say to people, well, we're going to put 4 windmills up on campus to generate, that may or may not necessarily work with the bigger community piece. I mean, there are difficult issues there.
Let's take another call here. Somebody in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I wonder if either of you gentlemen on your campuses have considered using worm composting for food waste. I understand that IKEA, for quite a while, they have a restaurant at their store in suburban Chicago, and they do it with semi-truck trailers, and they rotate them, and they compost all their food waste with red worms.
So University of Illinois is going to build a composting plant. I'm not 100% sure about the technologies they'll be using in the process, but they will be composting all the food which is not consumed as soon as the plant is completed.
Yeah, currently at Parkland, those are taken off, that waste is taken off campus by the vendor, so we're not planning anything with worms, although I'm familiar with the technology.
Well, I think that that's probably the best answer that we can give. When is the, so you, we're talking here about from the University of Illinois, this, all the waste that comes out of the residence halls.
Right.
What's your timeline for that?
We are expecting the construction to begin this fall. And it'll take a few months to complete that.
Right. Well, we have maybe about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus, talking about campus sustainability initiatives at University of Illinois, your Urbana-Champaign, and also Parkland College with Pradeep Khanna and Seamus Riley. And if someone wants to call here real quick, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Now, just something, Seamus, you'd said, it brings to mind the fact that maybe more because the University of Illinois is a residential campus and the people here are, a lot of them live here on the campus or someplace close, I would expect that a great proportion of students at Parkland get there by car.
Yes.
And so if you're interested in having some, again, you're looking at your carbon footprint. I don't know if you think about the energy that people use to get there.
Sure. It is a significant issue.
Yeah.
Part of the difficulty for a community college, particularly one in a huge district like Parkland, is that we cover parts of 12 counties in the state of Illinois. Now, we do have some sort of interesting sort of local Piatt train, for example, brings a bus from Monticello in on a regular basis, and that's a way of reducing some of that traffic coming in. Mm-hmm. Obviously, MTD is out there on a regular basis. We are noticing more of our faculty and staff beginning to utilize public transportation and bikes. But for many of our students, there is no way around it. And that is a significant issue for us as we begin to look towards that carbon neutral figure in 2060, because I'm not sure quite how we get around it, except to counterbalance it with other initiatives on campus, which sort of try to offset it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what you could do other than try to encourage carpooling, perhaps getting people together so that you instead of taking two cars, you take one if that's possible.
One of the things we've talked about is sort of the Sustainability Campus Committee about prioritizing parking spaces on Parkland's campus. We have open access parking, and it's free, of course, which is an advantage. But if you could get parking closer to one of the doors, or maybe the new main door, if you were carpooling and you had a separate carpooling lot, for example, which would encourage people to do it. So,
is this an issue that the university is interested in looking at?
Yes, it's extremely important for us, and I think many of our members of our campus community and our students want to bike to campus. And we have been expanding bike paths, recognized at the bronze level for being a bike-friendly city. We've got ambitious plans to expanding bike paths all across the campus. But if you look at our total carbon footprint, I was looking at numbers for 2008, direct transport was only 1% of the carbon. Most of it comes from buildings and from our operation, which is a large campus, large number of buildings, huge research facilities. But it is a priority, and we are keen to move up and get a high-level recognition and hopefully become a gold campus down the line.
Yeah. And if people are interested, one thing that I found that was kind of interesting, if people are interested in looking at energy use around the campus, there is a website that they can go to where they can look at a number of campus buildings and actually see what the energy use in the building is.
That's right. That's right. They have a dashboard, and they can see consumption in each building.
Yeah. Just as we're coming down to the point, we have a couple minutes left. I'm curious because both institutions depend on public financing, and that there are political aspects to the things that we're talking about here. Is this something that you run up against? I'm sure that there are people, say lawmakers, who would say, "Well, it's great that you're trying to cut down your operating costs," but do people have concerns about how the issue of sustainability, particularly, is incorporated into instruction, because it is a political conversation.
It is, yeah. Incorporating sustainability into instruction is not a problem. There's a strong faculty commitment. I was just trying to prepare a list of faculty who work in the area of sustainability. And if we look at natural resources, we look at policy, we look at business, it permeates all activities of our instruction. So that's not a problem. We do have a large number of buildings. Many of them are old, which we are trying to upgrade. There's deferred maintenance. And the campus is doing very well. We'll, of course, like to do better. But I think the campus has been able to make it it has been a priority for the campus. We have been able to make significant investments to make improvements and cut our carbon footprint in spite of all the challenges.
Yeah. I think the concern is the initial cost and the uncertainty about the technology. Mm-hmm. It seems like, you know, you look at countries around the world like Brazil and Germany who have made, you know, monumental changes in their energy consumption and the way in which they use energy. I think when you're talking about state-run institutions, I think when you bring in sort of new technology, which might be a transformative technology, there's some concern, I think, that, well, is this going to work, or in 20 years are we going to have to start and do some other technology, which is part of the difficulty in changing the whole national sort of mentality with energy costs. So,
well, we're going to have to stop there because we're here at the end of the time. We want to say thanks to our guest, Seamus Riley. He's the Vice President for Institutional Advancement at Parkland College.
Thank you so much, Seamus.
And Pradeep Khanna, he is Associate Chancellor here at the University of Illinois. Sustainability, one of the issues that falls in his area of responsibility.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.